Do you find that each of your courses, each of the six courses, gave you those same skills, like reflective practice, lit review, performative inquiry, living inquiry? Did they all give you a little bit of the same tools?
They did, and they did in a different in different formats. As we are reflecting on our own educative processes and practices, so too have our instructors have done this over and over again. They've worked with their students. They know their own strengths and what they bring to their teaching. So they'll do it in the way that informs themselves. They'll do it in a way that it's actually informing us, but based on their own informed practice, right? So, for example, Vicki Kelly has been, her strengths are in movement, her strengths are in music. So she brings a lot of that type of animated, musical, reflective academia to her students. And as well, she's a very astute scholar. So she'll incorporate it into, and a storyteller as well, actually, and probably why her supervision of myself is perfect, because that's what my thesis is about. But so her storytelling weaves itself into her actual course. She'll show examples just by the way she's educating how it is to be a master or a master's student at what you're doing in your educative practice. So she'll integrate the academia into the actual course. She'll, the literature is through it, and the movement. So she is an example of what it is that we will be looking to attain for the future.
Well, that's really amazing, because I know that when you and I have met and talked about our thesis process, from your work as an English ELSA teacher, it sounds to me like you're doing the same thing that you're saying Vicki does. You've brought storytelling to your process of teaching, to your practice of teaching your students English, and you've also brought videography.
Exactly.
On that note, how do you find that your experience as a teacher, as a student, and now as an emerging scholar who is writing a thesis on storytelling, how do you find that it's all sort of flowing and weaving together?
Well, that's a really perfect question at this point in my process. What I found is when I initially applied into the program, I didn't actually know that it would be the storytelling that I would actually be focused in on. I think that emerged through the course. I think, again, it's this idea of reflective practice that actually brought it to the surface. So what happened was when I was in the end of the actual master's of education program, and you have to transfer and do an MA, go into an MA, and it's a matter of transferring from one into another. That's when I started to realize, at that point, something surfaced in me, and I recognized it's been storytelling all along the way. In other words, even before I actually started looking, you know, getting into my teaching as a major practice, I was actually a youth counselor, a youth worker, and we had done film and videography with the young people that I was actually working with doing my practicum. It was really interesting because in doing that, I realized how narrative, I mean, this didn't come to fruition until recently, but at that point, they were actually using storytelling as a means for grounding their own identities within themselves, where they were in a system that actually was not, how do you say, wasn't exactly creating something that they felt proud or strongly about, but they needed to find themselves within it.
Was it experimental? And
what it was is we did a film club. It was part of a project that we had to do for our practicum. So we created a film club. And then these students, the ones that were in the special ed program, because they were having, you know, it'd be challenges in class in some form or another, usually behavioral challenges. And this is in secondary school, right? And it was actually a community school. So it was lovely because with community schools, unlike some of the other structured secondary schools, they had a little bit more autonomy and freedom to work with different programs. So we introduced a film club, and these students would create these little dialogues and vignettes, and they would film them. They would, you know, they would storyboard them, and then we went through the process, the editing process. They learned all of that, and they created all their own little mini films. And in doing so, they actually started to really come out of their shell. They started to realize their strengths within themselves and their own identity.
Mm-hmm.
It really brought it to a real point by the end of it, by the end of our practicum, where these kids felt so empowered. And just, you know, having bonded as well with another group of, you know, fellow students, it just grew, and it was a lovely process to watch. But also in the end, it was really monumental for me. And now, 10 plus years later, looking back on it, saying, wow, you know, this is where it originally started. This is where my idea is, like, storytelling can be transformative. So now I work with another vulnerable population, which are newcomers, and I use actually storytelling even in the classroom as ways of establishing examples that people can kind of root themselves in. Also, they give the stories back. So yes, you're right. I do actually use that in my education process, and inevitably it has become part of my master's.
What a nice experience for you to see how it can actually change lives of students as it did with the youth. Because
yeah,
if you give somebody a vehicle with which to express themselves, it can really empower them and strengthen them and build their self-esteem. So how much of your own personal autobiography do you bring to the process and share in the class, or specifically in your thesis do you share?
That's a great question. In the thesis, I've actually decided to weave my stories within the actual stories of the newcomers, because I was part of a project that was a storytelling dialogue, like a common ground dialogue circle project, much like the First Nations storytelling, where, you know, people tell their stories to each other and we learn from them and they can enhance community. So that was part of the original idea that I was kind of was at the hub of my thesis, but also those unique stories like the one I just talked about of the youth, my own personal, like, little narratives are weaved into the thesis, but as well in the classroom when I'm when we're trying to go over certain areas of understanding where they need to know components of, like, cultural relevance and things like that, I might use a small story of my own life in order to kind of bridge that gap of understanding, rather than, you know, just using textbooks and various modes like that. I mean, this is all part of that idea that creates the connection with real world learning, to me anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I would think that from bringing your own personal stories to the classroom, it's going to help you to better connect with your students.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it also creates quite an interesting bond, too, with the students, where they feel a lot safer in the classroom knowing that, you know, they're able to share their stories as well, that they can be vulnerable as well. They've seen their instructor be vulnerable, they can be vulnerable. It just kind of goes hand in hand. It's almost like it works in very reciprocal nature, actually.
Right, right. Well, now back to your thesis. I know that you've completed your first draft. I have a question that I think would be really beneficial to people listening who are undergoing the process of writing their thesis. First off, what are the places in the writing process that you have gotten stuck? Obviously, you've broken through those places, those blockages, otherwise you wouldn't have completed your first draft. Can you talk about that?
Okay, and I'll kind of make a small correction. I just met with my supervisor the other day, and I guess what this would be is not necessarily the first draft. This is the initial drafting of my writing, but yeah, we haven't quite got to the first draft quite yet.
Okay, hang on. What do you mean it's not a draft, it's a drafting of a draft? What does that mean?
Well, put it this way. What has worked for me is writing in pieces. So I've been writing, and then you put all the pieces together, and they're kind of in a way that as rhythmically as they can be put together. But then when you go back and look at them, you're going, wow, this, maybe there needs to be a little bit of adjustment here and there. So I think the first draft would be where you've actually gotten the pieces organized in a way that they fit much more congruently together. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've thrown them all together and edited them quite, how do you say, loosely.
Girl.
Exactly. Just so that they can get an idea of where I'm at. It was more or less so that they can kind of see how I've dealt with it along the way. And then I'm getting some feedback now. So we haven't got to the first draft point. That looks like it's going to be about a month away, maybe a month and a half away. But it's getting there anyways. But how I got through the hurdles originally, and the biggest hurdle, and I mean, I've gone to thesis boot camps. I've gone to two of them so far. They're really great. I highly recommend them for anybody that's doing their thesis. They give you so much food for thought and really good tangible ideas that you can, you know, hook your mind into and really work with. Well, even though I did do those, originally, it was just getting in there and writing, right, and just putting something down on paper, because it's almost this thing that overwhelms us, right? It's mm-hmm. this thesis, this big idea. It's like, oh my gosh, where do I start? And any good writer, actually, or any writer, good, bad, or indifferent, mm-hmm. is there, will say, how do I start? What do I do? Doesn't matter what kind of paper, whether it's a thesis, whether it's just your research paper, whatever kind of paper. It's those first moments of just putting pen to paper or hands to keys doing it.
Something that made me feel such relief was when I said to my supervisor, Lynn Fells, I said, you know, I'm stuck. I don't know how to do this. It's like a big mess and it's overwhelming. And I felt so unique in my thoughts. And she said, all of my students say that. Everybody goes through this. And what a relief to know that, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so having colleagues around, like having like-minded individuals around, was really one of the first tools that helped me. So, I mean, I had a friend from one of the courses I took, and we actually corresponded. And so she put out a little bit of a competition for a group of us. And she said, okay, everybody, 5,000 words in a week, or else you have to go on Facebook and, I can't remember, take some random picture of, I don't know. And it was like, okay, I don't want to be that person on Facebook actually putting that picture out there. So I'm going to write my 5,000 words. So it was a bit of a challenge, right? So mm-hmm. that's what got me through that first hurdle of like putting pen to paper and or hands to keys, right? And start writing. The other thing that I found that really helped me was another avenue of keeping in mind that writing in pieces. This was another great tactic that my supervisor told me. Write out a table of contents. Take those tables of contents, break them down into pieces, right? And then just write to that piece. So write to that actually particular topic. So if you've got a heading of the history of storytelling. Well, what is the history of storytelling? Well, it could be maybe from the early centuries to, you know, lakes, say the 1900s, and now the 1900s onwards, right? So writing them in like little subheadings after that, right? Or what is the point that you're trying to establish? Give some examples, things like that. So just breaking it down into little morsels and typing just to that topic and then going away from it, leaving it, and then coming back to it later, looking at that, looking at it again and say, what does that say? Is that what I really wanted to say? Things like that. So just use them in bite-sized pieces. Again, the thesis bootcamp lays that out for you, but when you start to do it, you'll find things that work for you. That's what got me through it.
I know you said that it's not quite a draft, it's a month away. You must feel really good about that you have completed so much writing, and now you're at the stage of piecing and making it flow a little more. But you've done a lot of writing, Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually in a short amount of time, too, because I decided that that's what I was going to do. So I actually found that setting a schedule every day and just saying, you know what, I'm doing 2 hours this time each day. And that really helped me, too. And really making it part of my daily schedule and my regular schedule. And allowing time for myself to actually have a life outside of that, too. Outside of course, my work, my writing, you know. But taking some time every week and making, you know, moments where I can connect with other people was important as well.
Yeah, nice. One thing I'm curious about is when you complete your thesis and when you graduate from your program, such a great accomplishment, do you have a vision of what you want to do with your master's, having, you know, become so focused on storytelling? Is this something you want to take away with you and create in your life?
That's a fabulous question. A lot of people have asked me, but they haven't worded it quite that way. And I think how you've said it is exactly what I think where it's going to go, is the idea of that it's not just graduating and it's not just, you know, defending the thesis. It isn't getting that piece of paper. I think what it is this has become part of my life. And through that reflective process, through the idea of realizing what it's meant to me, it is always going to be there from here on in. It's going to be part of my, you know, my daily, probably, well, maybe not daily, but weekly regime of teaching, for sure. It will always be there from here on in, and being recognized that it's there. So, for example, here's a perfect example, even outside of the classroom, which part of my thesis is about as well. I just had coffee with a friend today, and we reconnected, and he's a newcomer Canadian as well. And we actually were teaching together when he first came to Canada. And he started to tell me about his story, about how he had come here to Canada and what his expectations were. And I got a real background on him that I hadn't had before. And it was really so rewarding. And there was a eureka moment in there again when we were having this conversation. And I was saying to him, Raj, he says, why did you ever decide to come to Canada? Because it's always a curiosity for me. And he started to tell me, he says, you know, when I was 19 and I was, you know, taking my teacher training at college and where I met my wife, he says, I decided I was moving to Canada back then. It has been a goal for me for a long time, but it was only 20 years after that that we finally made the move. And I said, you know what? That is so amazing. I actually stopped him right there in our conversation. And I said, you cannot believe this, Raj, but I just was in this project. And one of the participants who was one of the storytellers almost had an identical story as you. I says, and he's from Mexico. And I says, Raj, I says, we're worlds apart from each other. You're from Malaysia. He's from Mexico. And you two shared that same idea. I says, isn't that amazing? I said, this is what, to me, it's all about. When I hear your story, when I hear another person's story, and I realize that it is these connections that root us all together mm-hmm. is what makes me excited.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's pretty amazing because it's very universal, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Well, Teresa, just on that note, in terms of your teaching, it always comes back to our teaching and what we're learning, but also our art. I want to know what inspires you in your life to create, to express, to keep teaching, to keep bringing what you believe and what you're passionate about into your work and into how you express yourself. And basically, what drives you to be more?
Wow, that's a big one. What keeps me creating is, how do you say, the essence of me, I think. Mm. I am by nature, by birth, I don't know, genetics may factor into it, but always have created and been creating and will always do that until the end of my life, I'm sure of it, in some form or another. So that's just part of who it is to be me. So I will always create somehow, whether it be through a curriculum or whether it be through, you know, doing video or photography or painting or storytelling, whatever it be, writing, etc. So I'll always be creating. What keeps me doing the things I do is the love of process, the love of engagement, of curiosity, of growth. It's what, to me, life is about. It's always learning, and I love learning. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it will keep perpetuating me and moving me forward. It's my momentum. It's my caffeine of life.
That's so great. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is very inspiring. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So Teresa, it's just been really such a pleasure to talk with you today about your thesis and your art and your passion.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for the great questions. Wow.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Arts Edge at CJSF 90.1 FM. We can also be found on the internet at www.cjsf.ca or at TELUS HD channel 7014.
Stay tuned to Girls So Groovy coming up next.
But before that, in keeping with the theme of language and art and English and arts ed, I have a song that I think covers its bases. It's a tune that was recorded by the American hip-hop group The Black Eyed Peas. It was released in June 2003 as the lead single from their third album, Ella Funk, and it was the band's first record to feature Fergie. The song features uncredited vocals from Justin Timberlake. The song peaked at number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100 and topped the charts in Australia and the United Kingdom and became the best-selling single of 2003 in the UK. The band received 2 nominations, Record of the Year and Best Rap Sung Collaboration for this tune at the 46th Grammy Awards. The song was written by will.i.am, Taboo, Apdiap, Ron Fair, P-Board, G. Pageant Jr., M., Frecciantuno and Jay Curtis, and was co-produced by will.i.am and Ron Fair. In this song, the Black Eyed Peas lament on various world problems. Many issues are discussed in this song, which include but are not limited to terrorism, U.S. government hypocrisy, racism, gang crime, pollution, war, intolerance, and greed. The music video for this song was shot in East Los Angeles and features the Black Eyed Peas and various other people taking part in the song. And you may ask, what is the song? And I say, where is the love? Here we go.
Drama on only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate, and to discriminate only generates hate, and when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all,
people
y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach, and would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us, send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
Strange, is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs, chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering as the youth are young. So ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really, what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends, not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
Where's the truth, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
Where's the love, y'all?
People killing, people dying, children hurt, and you hear them crying. When you practice what you preach, and would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning. Where is the love?
Where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love?
Where is the love?
Feel the weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people gets colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinemas, yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love? One world, one world.
We only got
one world, one world.
That's all we got.
One world, one world.
And something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with the good world, world. Yeah. We only got
one world, one world.
That's all we got.
One world, one world.
The Peak newspaper has been SFU's independent student newspaper since 1965 and is distributed to all three campuses every week and has been online since 1994. The Peak has collective meetings every Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. at MBC 2901 under Higher Grounds Coffee, and they're welcoming new volunteers. Student media is important for all of us. Be part of student media at SFU. Be part of the Peak newspaper.
It's time to play Distractions. Today's contestant, Jason Claremont of the BC Lions. Okay, Jay, name five things that distract drivers and cause collisions with trains.
Okay, looking out the side window, eating or drinking, adjusting the radio, talking on the phone, talking with passengers. That's five, Bob.
Oh, sorry, I got distracted.
A message from this station, direction 2006 in Operation Lifesaver.
You've got questions.
What's the difference between academic and non-academic sources?
I'm trying to find material on women writers in post-communist Eastern Europe, but I can't seem to get the right combination of keywords.
How can I tell if a journal article is peer-reviewed?
How do I do cite an online newspaper article that doesn't have a page number?
How do I cite an episode from a TV show using MLA format?
We've got answers. Ask a librarian using our online chat reference service, AskAway. www.lib.sfu.
You're listening to